welcome to On the Brighter Side. I'm your host, Monica Tanner, and I'm so excited about our episode today. I am chatting with my neighbors and friends and owners of a multi-million dollar international direct sales company called Sensi. I'm sure you've all heard about it, and today I asked them to come chat with me about what it's like to run such a successful company together as a married couple. So we are going to delve into their relationship and their company, and I am so excited for you guys to hear from them. So without further ado, I will introduce my guests to you, Heidi and Orville Thompson. How are you guys?
Good.
Yeah, we're doing all right. Can't complain.
I know. It's good to be here.
Awesome. Well, I'm so excited you guys agreed to come and chat with us today. So I'm wondering if you would just start by telling us a little bit about yourselves and your family.
I'll let you start.
A little bit about ourselves. We've been married 28 years. We have 5 children, 4 girls, one boy, with one left at home. That's it. They've all left.
And they're all doing okay so far. So we didn't screw them up.
They are doing okay. So, yeah.
Yeah, so far so good.
Awesome. So, I'm wondering if you'll tell us the story of how you guys met and fell in love.
It's a good one.
It is. You know, faith is something that's super important to us. And for those of you who understand may get it, those of you who don't would think you guys are the craziest people in the world.
I know. So what was it? 1990.
Yeah.
I had a boyfriend who had, it was July. He had just come to visit me for my birthday over 4th of July. And then,
well, he was dumb enough to tell you that you could date other people.
He did.
I think he wanted to date other people.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know what it was.
Or maybe he was just being chivalrous.
He went to do summer sales. And when he left, he said, I love you, but I don't feel it's fair to tell you not to date anybody else. So I said, well, shoot, if you don't love me that much, I'm going to date too. So anyway.
So I was on a mission in Korea, and I was supposed to come home in July. But I woke up one night in a cold sweat knowing I had to get home in June. And the reason in my mind was you have to get home and spend time with your dad. And so I thought my dad was going to die or something. So I called my mission president and I said, I think I need to go home. And he said, okay, well, let's both pray about it. We did. The next day, he said, we were able to make the arrangements, and I agree with you. If you need to get home, I understand. So I came home. That was June 16th. My parents had moved to Idaho Falls while I was gone, and I've always been a social kid, and I knew nobody in Idaho Falls, so I was feeling a little bit down. So I went to a young adult dance that Friday, the 13th.
The 13th.
Yeah. So I asked Heidi to dance. I saw Heidi, and I asked her to dance, and it was a great conversation.
We had a lot in common. We clicked, you know. And when the dance was over, I thought I heard him say, would you like to dance again? But I wasn't sure, so I didn't want to embarrass myself. So I said, thank you, and walked away.
And yes, I did ask her to dance again. And yes, she did walk away.
I wasn't sure.
So. And I was standing in the middle of the dance floor, rejected.
I know, I feel bad.
Without a wingman to go back to and commiserate with. Because I was all alone at the dance.
Yeah, I went back to my friend and I said, oh, I think he asked me to dance again, but it was so loud. We were right in front of the speakers. I wasn't sure if I heard him.
So I couldn't get her out of my mind. And the last song was coming up and I had this conversation in my head. Orville, go ask her to dance again. No, she's already rejected me. I'll just make a fool of myself.
See that dumb voice in your head.
Orville, if you're going to marry her, you're going to have to talk to her again. And if you're not, it doesn't matter what she thinks of you. That logic was the boldness that I needed. So I went and asked her to dance again. And that was about it.
Yeah. And then he invited us. I came with a friend. So he invited us to go have dessert somewhere. And we ended up getting pie and going and sitting by the temple in Idaho Falls.
And we borrowed 3 forks from the restaurant. And we got a whole pie because it was cheaper than 2 pieces. It was on special that night. So we just sat and ate and laughed and ate pie with out of the 10 with 3 forks.
But I still, in my head, was not thinking boyfriend. I was thinking I was going to set him up with my friend that came with me. Because they got, you know, they kind of got along too. And so anyway, it took a little bit. And then I had to break up with my boyfriend and break his heart. And
he's done fine.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah.
Well, thank goodness that worked out for everyone. So who between the two of you is more romantic?
I think in the classic sense of the word, I am.
You are, yeah.
I think in the kind of modern interpretation of the word, I think I am.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not very romantic.
Yeah. So horrible.
Yeah. Like, I'll remember dates more. I'll remember things from when we were dating.
Yeah, do you remember we did that? Yeah, and I don't. Yeah.
Yeah, she's always been...
You remember kids' stuff.
Yeah, I do.
She's always been the more practical.
Yeah.
The more practical one.
Yeah, awesome. So I love the story of how Scentsy first started, but I don't think my listeners are very familiar with it. Could you take us back to how it all started? So Orville, you were selling at trade shows, right? And what were you doing, Heidi?
I was a stay-at-home mom. For 10 years.
Cool.
I had to be at home with my kids.
And then you found something you thought was interesting.
Yeah, so I graduated college with a history degree, plans to go to graduate school, law school or business school, but I had to make money first, and so I tried to get a job, but I graduated in 1992, and there was a recession going on, particularly in Seattle where we lived, and I couldn't get a job. So Heidi's family had a business selling products at fairs and shows, home shows, big state fairs, and things that slice and dice don't crack, chip, or peel, you know, things you see on late night TV that are sold with pitchman on a microphone. And it's a little bit of a infotainment kind of sales process. So on weekends, to help us out, we would go and work the home shows or the fairs for her mom and dad. And her mom and dad were divorced, but they're running the business together. And it was really creating pressure on Alice, who had been remarried, her mom. And Alice asked me if I would help her separate from Heidi's dad, because they were running the business together, but they were divorced and it was just not working. So I looked at the book and I found an opportunity for me and something that would help Alice. And so that's what we did, is we started a business. First, I started making car wax and selling the car wax.
ShamWow or something.
Well, that was another big product that Jack and Alice were selling. And so Alice got the chamois booth, the car wax booth, and that's what we started with, chamois and car wax. And then that grew. At our peak, we probably would have 15, 20 different products that we were selling at big state fairs. But that got hit during 9/11. So Heidi was a stay-at-home mom. Our kids were being raised. She traveled with me. We had a travel trailer, and we traveled doing the shows when the kids were little. But once they got into school, it was really my business to screw up. She didn't have much to do with it. But 9/11 really hit the business, because the main season, all the profit and most of the sales came in September. And so when 9/11 hit, the Tuesday after Labor Day weekend, 8 days after Labor Day, all the big shows started the weekend after Labor Day. So we had a great weekend, we ordered more product, and then Tuesday came, 9/11 hit, nobody came to the fairs, and all of our shipments were coming.
Everybody was in shock, I think. Mm-hmm. They were all watching TV. Wow.
Well, if they did come to the fair, they felt guilty having fun and spending money. Mm-hmm. So in a time when we thought we were going to make about $300,000 cash flow, which would have brought us out of debt, we'd been 32 out of debt with a business that was doing pretty well, we lost $300,000. Mm-hmm. So we had about $300,000 in debt going into it. We left with about $600,000 in debt.
Ouch.
Instead of being out of debt. So that was a $600,000 swing in a pretty non-sophisticated business. And then we financed everything with vendor credit and credit cards, and then they got ratcheted up. So we were carrying, by the time end of 2003 came around, we were $700,000 underwater. We had about $1.1 million in debt with an average interest rate of 20%. And it was brutal.
Our debt service was like... A couple things also happened along the way that play into it. Other stories. We should write a book, but... So he came to me one day and just said, here's where we are. We're in debt. Huge, huge debt. I think we should file bankruptcy.
Well, I don't know if I was... I said, because I was resistant to bankruptcy because I watched my dad unwind business and spend years paying off his debt because he didn't feel bankruptcy was fair to vendors. And so I wasn't for it. I couldn't see another way around it.
So he said, I think we should file bankruptcy. And I said, no, we had borrowed money from so many other people that would have gone down with us. So I didn't think that was the right thing to do. So I said, I don't know what we're gonna do, but we will swing for the fence and we're gonna swing really hard.
So I went into the process of seriously looking for a product that would be it would be $1 million product. And if we could get a product that succeeded
to sell at your fairs and shows.
Yeah, to sell at fairs and shows. You know, companies like ours made a lot of money when they found home runs. And so I was just looking for a home run product. And I was at the home show in Salt Lake City. What's interesting, at that home show, we didn't have any money. At that point, we were literally buying groceries with coins out of our water jug.
Oh my God.
It was brutal. All of our credit was gone. All of our cash was gone. Every time we paid down a credit card, they lowered the credit available. So we didn't have that excess capacity to manipulate our credit card situation anymore. It was getting really, really tight. They put the squeeze on us. So I took a bad check. I kept telling the check's in the mail, the check's in the mail. When I got to the show,
pay for all these booths.
I said, I am so sorry, Deborah. I've been lying to you. The check isn't in the mail. Here's the check, but it's no good. Please let me set up and I will do the show and I'll buy this check back from you with cash by the end of the show. And she trusted me, and that was the bottom of our financial situation. And it was at that show that I met Kara and Colette, who had started Scentsy four or five months before.
Yeah.
And they were just trying to see if people would like their concept. But they didn't really have a business plan, a marketing plan, a supply chain. So they were very newly into the idea, and I liked the concept. I sent it home to Heidi.
I didn't
called her.
Quite get it. And honestly, everything he always brought home was junk anyway. So I really, honestly, not sure I even listened to that phone call.
Yeah. And the stuff we sold was good, but you know, there were always ideas that we were trying to come up with, and none of them really worked for this, you know, home run idea. So anyway, I brought Scentsy home, and Heidi fell in love with it. And I couldn't figure out where the money was in it. And so I was just helping Kara and Colette. I felt so bad for them because they were so new and easily taken advantage of, but they were the nicest people and they had this great idea. So I was kind of coaching them, and was only a few weeks in, they said, Orville, do you want to just buy the company?
What did we say? We don't have any money. And really, your business is only like 5 months old.
Yeah, it's not really, you don't really have a business and we really don't have any money, but let's work something out. And we did, and it's been great. I think that they're
still both part of the company too, so
mm-hmm. And have done extremely well. It was very important for us to take care of them,
but you can't say that it was a home run right off the bat either. I mean, it took a few years. We very slowly built it.
Here's the process about marriage, right? Those times when it was my business and Heidi was the stay-at-home mom, quote unquote, there were a lot of things I kept to myself, and I didn't really include her in a lot of the decisions. And I think you saw it as it's horrible.
Your business. Yeah.
Yeah. It's my business to screw up.
It's your business, but I'll spend the money.
Yeah. And what happened was I was completely broken. All my ideas weren't being validated. We brought on a couple partners at one point because we had good cash flow, but we just had a horrible debt situation. And that turned horribly wrong. And they thought I should be in jail. You know, ridiculous, but they thought I should be in jail. We're telling all of our friends in the neighborhood that I was a scam artist. I mean, it was a very low point. And really, Heidi was my only friend. And when we did that bankruptcy conversation, what should we do? We made a decision at that point.
Going forward, everything would be done together.
Yeah, that if we had each other, then no one else could affect us. And if we made every decision together, then no decision would be wrong. Mm-hmm. The worst, it would be a learning experience. But if we made decisions independent of each other, then if it went wrong, it would create tension between us. And so
that makes it easy to blame too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't make decisions unless we're both on board.
Yeah. So tell us how Scentsy is structured, because I've heard that Heidi makes all the important decisions. Is that right?
Yeah.
Kind of goes against what you just said, but.
Yeah. No. I think it's true. So Heidi and I are the only shareholders. We ended up buying Kara and Colette out a few years ago. We gave them a little stock when we bought the company from them in a royalty, and they wanted their stock purchased back. One of them wanted to do cash out, and so we bought them out. So then Heidi and I, from that point on, have been the only shareholders. I'm called the CEO. She's called the president, but those are just made up titles. We really do everything.
They are made up titles.
We really kind of do everything together. We don't have a board of directors, because we're the only shareholders. Maybe we should. We've had many offers to buy the company. Private equity we get weekly emails from private equity wanting to invest, but we don't think that's best for the company. We have a great executive team, but the way decisions are made.
Well, and I'm going to just say too, we have head, Orville's more brains. And then I'm heart, I think, that I help bring heart into the business. So
right.
And I think that we also say that we're the rudder and the sail. You know, I'm a sail that can move a big boat, but without a rudder, I'll run it into the cliff. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did with my other business. And so my entrepreneurial spirit also always gave me capacity, but I needed direction. And this kind of kite and string, rudder and sail concept really got infused into Sensi, that every motivating principle or every motivating idea needs a guiding idea or a guiding principle. Because even generosity can become a negative if you're not responsible. Simplicity can become negative if you are not focused on quality. Authenticity can be a negative if you don't have respect for others. So even the things that make us who we are can be negative without that guidance. And so Heidi is an incredibly deep rudder for the company that keeps the rest of us on our toes.
Well, a lot of times, you know how women have intuition? Mm-hmm. A lot of times that might be my answer to something. And sometimes the executive team doesn't understand that. And I'll say, this is how I feel. I can't tell you why, but this is how I feel. We shouldn't do that. For example.
Let me explain and then we'll go to the example.
Okay.
So early on, I rejected that or I resisted that. And we had some executives that, this is ridiculous. It makes no sense.
She can't even explain.
If she can't articulate her position, why should we pay attention to it? Hmm. And then I got defensive. So my role really became one of understanding her intuition and articulating it. So my job...
You're supposed to read my mind. And...
Yeah. We say that there's a sixth love language called telepathy, and that's the only way I can show her I love her is to read her mind properly.
Mind, yeah.
But my job over the last 4 or 5 years at Sensi, which really has been the best years of Sensi, for sure, at least from our perspective, my job is to interpret and to articulate her intuition. And the executive team we have now all accept her intuition without expecting her to articulate it. Because oftentimes, when we try to articulate our intuition, we convince ourselves that our intuition isn't effective or valid. Exactly, because if we can't articulate it, then how valid can it be? So we have this role where we allow her intuition to be pure, don't expect her to articulate it. That's my job to articulate it. In hindsight, everyone says, well, Heidi did it again. And we just had a great example.
Yes.
And it's a sad story. And I don't know where it's going to end up, but we had a very prominent person going to speak at our reunion. And we had him ready.
We had almost signed the contract.
We were ready to sign the contract.
Yeah.
And Heidi said,
no, you can't do it. I don't know why. And they were kind of frustrated because it was very hard to get this. Yeah.
And it was an incredibly unique opportunity. And
I was the only one that
put that together worked very hard and thought that they had just accomplished a major coup for the business. And when Heidi said, no, why not? Well, I don't know.
And maybe that I didn't appreciate their hard work.
Yeah.
I did, but I just had this feeling, do not do that. Do not do that. And it...
Well, since that time, he's had some incredibly bad PR. He's been dropped by his publisher. It would have been a nightmare for a female-dominated audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it would have cost us a fortune to do it. And that's an example of if we would have forced Heidi to articulate that, we would have all said, your argument isn't
crazy.
Good enough when we move forward.
Mm-hmm.
But we just don't. We trust it. And over and over and over again, that has been proven to be right. So that's the evidence us hard-numbered guys need.
That's awesome. I love that. I love that you just accept it now. So what do you think has been the most challenging thing about working together as a team?
Well, maybe it was in the earlier years where you didn't quite understand how I do things and I didn't understand how you do things.
Yeah, I think that was the hardest.
But we've come together since then. We understand each other. We know our weaknesses and our strengths and where we can help each other be better.
Well, and it took a long time for me to understand what your anxiety was or what...
I got a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Like you would be frustrated and I couldn't understand why until I figured out, here's kind of the way I see it. And I see this in the board meetings I go to, in the trade associations. I see this in the different executive teams that we've had. The business world is really set up around masculine. It's a masculine world where division, competition, survival of the fittest, hunter-gatherer concepts dominate business. And even women executives that I've served with on boards, or oftentimes we've had at Cincy, they tend to have a masculine mindset if they come from corporate America. There is a feminine mindset that is about connection, love, consensus, collaboration, intuition. It's more heart versus head. And it took me a long time to understand it and then to respect it.
Embrace it.
Yes. And then to teach it to other men.
Mm-hmm.
So Cincy went, there was a transition from the early days of Cincy to now, where we have become a much more feminine organization, where we are driven by spirit, driven by heart, driven by intuition.
But and this most is, of yeah. your employees or
executives,
consultants,
are female. So you kind of have to.
Yeah, our female base is, we're about 50-50, and our executive team is mostly male.
Yeah. So a lot of them have had to learn.
Yes.
The heart.
But as an organization, we are a feminine organization, meaning that we are heart first, spirit first, intuition first, and when we build programs around that spirit. When the field, our consultants start to feel, we can sense anxiety, right? And that drives our decisions more than numbers.
They'll even say, oh, it's feeling so corporate-y right now. So then we have to make that
the
switch.
The feeling is off, right? Yeah. And we will look at, we'll pay much more attention to consultants' concerns over the feeling or the mood than we will over numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Numbers to us don't really, because we're the only shareholders, numbers are really completely secondary. Which is another difference for a lot of businesses.
So my question for you, Heidi, is how did you hold on to get to that point where your opinion mattered so much? Like, I feel like I would have just been like, bleh, I'm out of here. How did you stay strong until you made that impact?
I'm just that type of person. I am stubborn, I think. So I have to get my way. And I knew, not that my way was right, but I knew that, and I feel God was involved in all of this too. We didn't just do this on our own. We definitely were guided. And I felt that that was what I was supposed to do, and that he would get on board. And that we would become a more cohesive team if I just kept doing what I was doing.
That's awesome. I love that. So how through this whole process did you keep difficulties in your business from affecting your relationship? Because you guys have been kind of all over the map. So how did you keep that separate?
So is this the fun little...
So one example, I remember
in the earlier
2010, 2011, we were going through our first real disruption. So in the beginning, it was all rainbows and butterflies. And in the beginning, it was really hard. Heidi and I didn't make any money. We didn't take any money out of Cincy until
3 years
December 2007. We started May of 2004. So it was a long time where we just worked our tails off, because this is Heidi's stubbornness. She would not allow us to take any money or incur any expense until our long-term cash flow statement showed that we could pay for it indefinitely.
And I didn't want any money taken out of any other businesses that we had mingled in with Cincy money at all. Was doing the books, so I kept everything Cincy, nothing else at all.
Even her consulting commission check, she wouldn't cash. So we took zero out of Cincy until November. It was November or December of 2007. So super disciplined there, but everything was, we were going through hyper growth, and we were like the only direct selling company at the time that people were paying attention to and would go to the direct selling association meetings, and everybody, what are you guys doing? Because you're the only ones that are growing right now. And we are growing like crazy. You know, we are the number one fastest growing consumer products company on the Inc. 500 1 year, 16th overall. So it was a blistering growth rate. Then, you know, hyper growth starts with hype, and hype is an unrealistic expectation of future results.
What comes after hype?
Reality? As soon as hype gets, as soon as that bubble gets burst, and you descend down to where you are, right? And how good you can be. But that first disruption, when people starting to realize, wait, not everybody who signs up is going to become a millionaire. Not everybody can just cruise right through the rank structure. Not all employees are going to become VPs. Those first disruptions were going on. And we had some employees that were really difficult at the time. And I'm a better sleeper than Heidi. So I would sleep and she would wake up a couple hours laying in bed stewing over everything.
I would stay awake for hours thinking about, we need need to do this and this and this, and we should say this to them, and we need to hire this person, and we need to fire this person. Just stew all night long.
And so then as soon as I would like roll over, wake up my eyes, she's like, oh, you're awake.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now we need to do this. This is what we need to do today. We need to do this and this, and I have a whole list, and I'm just rambling on.
And I'm just bleary-eyed, like, oh, Heidi, I can't process this.
I know, that's kind of mean of me. It really was kind of selfish.
So I just said one time, if you're going to wake me up to talk, at least you could be naked.
That's the motto in our house,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
And that became yeah. the, if she needed to unload what
then
was in her mind,
the
then
she'd crawl in bed naked.
Yeah. I'm not going to complain.
Yeah. It worked. It really worked. We were able to work through a lot of stuff that was going on.
Yeah. And I think it's that little give and take. It doesn't take much give and take, but there has to be something. And I think for me, it was more of a sign that you respected me enough to do a little favor.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a sign.
And then I knew you would listen to what I had to say. So.
Well, thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
I love that.
It really
so
works,
much.
Guys.
I always tell couples that are engaged, whenever I go to the bridal showers and they have like the advice, mm-hmm. I always say, if you get in a fight, just get naked mm-hmm. when you're ready to make up, because it's hard to fight with somebody who's naked,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. True.
So what are your best tips for communicating with each other during really high stress situations?
No, we just talk it out. We're really good about communicating, I think.
There are those times where you just don't say anything at all.
Yeah, and I need a cool down period, and then we come together. And
that was something we had to learn too.
Through.
Like when I feel stress or when I feel a disagreement, I'm a gatherer, right? So I want...
And I'm a pusher.
Yeah. So I'm like, well, come, let's get close. Let's talk.
Don't touch me. I don't want to talk to you right now.
Yeah, and so I have to realize that giving her time is not accepting. I don't have to accept that she's rejecting me, or I don't have to believe she's rejecting me when she pushes me away to give herself time to process. So usually now, instead of engaging in that battle of wills, we're gonna embrace. No, we're going to push away. Well, that's not a very nice thing to do, to push me away. That's, you know, we're supposed to be a couple. We're supposed to get, you know, those stupid thoughts just kind of have gone away over now. And so now when she gets that clenched jaw and I can tell she's ticked at me, I just back off. And then she'll come around and we'll have, like, Happy Heidi will show back up. And you never say you're sorry except through actions.
Really, you guys, I have a hard time saying I'm sorry. I do. I know.
I don't know if you... I think I could count maybe five times where she said I'm sorry. But I know
when
she's sorry.
In my head, I'm right.
I know if she's sorry. But maybe I've said I'm sorry too often in our marriage.
Yeah.
And that's it irritates you that I'm sorry is kind of like that.
I'm ready to reconcile.
Yeah. I love you is like meaning...
Let's talk.
No, sometimes people use I love you as...
Say,
I love you
I'm
means
sorry.
I love you, get away from me. I love you.
I'm sorry.
So some words can mean too much
or not enough. Yeah. Or we overuse them.
Yeah. A lot of times I might use I'm sorry and I'm sorry we're fighting. Can you listen to me now? Right?
Well, this has been so awesome, guys. I want to be respectful of your time. I know you have someplace to be. So I have a few more questions and maybe we can get back together and talk some more, because I have so many questions for you. But
we'll keep our answers shorter.
Awesome. Okay. If you could talk to all the young couples out there who want to start their own or build their own businesses, what would you tell them? What would be your best advice about working together and building something amazing together?
I would say, first off, not all couples can do it. It's really hard to work with your spouse. And I think not everybody can do it. And we've had many people say that, oh, I used to work with my husband, but it didn't work out. We can't do it.
So there's a key, I think, and an image that I use, where our relationships, our possessions, and our circumstances are like arrows. And if they're pointing in, then they will go all the way to our center core, where fear and greed and love fight for dominance. And it's really the worst of ourselves when we are feeling entitled to something. And really, an arrow in is a feeling of entitlement. How is my spouse affecting me? If that's your thought, then your fear and your greed are going to dominate that relationship. If you can flip those arrows and it's no longer what do I deserve from my spouse, but what can I do for my spouse, then that relationship goes through the best of what your spouse is. And it's really unfair of us to expect more than the best of somebody. And if we do, that is an arrow in, which is an entitlement. And so really the way to live a happy life and the way to cooperate, the way to get along with anybody, and the way to run a business as a couple is to be focused on keeping our arrows out. Because if I am doing my best to contribute to her and to build a relationship with what I can do, and she reciprocates, it's an upward ladder. If, on the other hand, I feel entitled to things from her that she's not giving me, either in business or in our relationship, then that unrecognized or unrealized entitlement is what creates misery and resentment. And again, that's because that relationship, the arrow is pointing right down to my core, which is fear and greed, that natural man that we have to overcome. And so the key, I believe, to working in any partnership, particularly in marriage, is each partner has to be focused primarily on the other. And if they are, then the best of both will come out. If they're not, the worst of both will come out. And no business can be run by the worst of two people.
I think also knowing strengths and weaknesses, we don't do the same duties. And so knowing what you're good at and what your spouse is good at and dividing those things up, I think, is a good thing too. And also space. We have separate offices. We have meetings together. We'll be in the same room for meetings. But I do think space is important when you work together to have a place to go when you need your space for a few minutes. So
those are all great tips. That's awesome. Oh, I have so many questions for you. Okay. If you could ensure that your children knew one thing that you each stand for, what would that one thing be?
One thing?
Out of this life, what would you want your kids to remember that my dad stood for this? Mm-hmm.
Contribute more than you take. Every relationship, every circumstance, you have the opportunity to be a net giver and never be a net taker.
Love that. So good.
Mine would probably be the love, that your heart is big enough to love lots and lots and lots of people. And even though you might be somebody
of accomplishment,
that doesn't mean that you have to treat people differently. You still love and you still serve. And I think that's what they would say about me, that I have a big heart.
There is never, no heart is, no number of people that could fill a loving heart. You can love, sometimes you think, how could I love two children as much as one? How could I love
a
million people as much as I love 10 people? But I think a loving heart has the capacity to expand to the number of people they come in contact with.
And I think it's arrows out, like he was talking about, that you focus on other people. So no matter how busy I am, I still do things that you would probably find shocking. You know what I mean? I find the time to do things for people that
I've actually been the recipient of that, actually. I've gotten a text from you in a time, you know, just some sweet little thoughtful thing that I'm like, wow, she is so busy and she took the time to write that out. So
the cards,
I know
lettered,
exactly what you're talking about. Yes.
But I think it's that's what light is too, right? Mm-hmm. The arrows out, they're kind of like rays of light. And a person that is focused on others through love, or when our arrows are pointed out, we're motivated by love, not greed or fear. Mm-hmm. And that's the light that people see. That's when people shine. That's, you know, Heidi's glow is because she's motivated by love, not by fear or greed. And what's interesting about success, there's another thing about people becoming entrepreneurs or in any kind of enterprise where wealth can scale quicker than you might be ready for it. A lot of times we're motivated by fear or greed. You know, we want a more comfortable house. We're afraid that our family won't respect us, or our friends won't respect us. We're worried about our car breaking down, so we want a bit better car. We're worried about not having a retirement, so we want to save. Right? Those are all still good things, but it's basically motivated by a fear of the future, a fear of uncertainty, or a desire for a greater comfort level. We're also motivated by love, and, you know, duty is part of that. that. You know, we have a responsibility to our children. We love our children. We want things better for our communities, for our families, for our church, whatever the case may be. When you find success financially, a lot of the fear that you once had is gone. So you're only left with greed or love as core motivators. And if you allow yourself to be motivated by greed, then greed and money become very dangerous, corrosive, destructive forces in your life. Love and money become incredibly empowering forces in your life. And so our challenge is to check our greed and to reiterate our love as a core motivator, because we're afraid of the consequence. We have enough money now to be incredibly miserable, destructive people.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And you see that happening. Families get destroyed, businesses get destroyed, communities get destroyed, because people that don't have fear anymore can't muster or don't have the emotional ability to let love dominate their life. And if they don't, then bad things happen.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we should wrap up. But one of the things I wanted to talk about, but maybe when we get together again, it would be awesome to talk about how this has enriched the culture of Scentsy. But you guys give back so much to the community through charitable giving, through entertainment, not only to our community, but the world, you guys do so much. So I wanted that to at least be stated, but I hope that we can talk about it a lot if you guys will be willing to come back. Yeah, that would be awesome.
It's all part of the same concept.
Part
too,
B.
Right? Contribute
yes.
more than you take.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love
out.
It. Yeah. Right? I love it so much. So what are you guys most excited about in the future for Scentsy? And then personally, what are you guys most excited about coming up?
I think for me, it's just the day-to-day, seeing consultants do things and become more than they ever thought that they could. Daily, they will make posts on Facebook. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I did this. And that's the coolest thing, to see somebody become more than they thought they ever could be.
We had consultants on a tour of Scentsy, and I was eating lunch, and they had a daughter, maybe 12, 13, and she saw me. She just got so excited, mm-hmm. and she came and she gave me a big hug.
Oh.
And I think they were from down south somewhere, driving to Seattle to rescue some animals, going on this big family road trip. And she was 12, probably. Hard to tell.
Yeah, these days.
My kids have grown up now. But and the employee giving her the tour said, oh, she's been talking about you the whole time. Because we do Facebook Lives.
Yeah, sure.
And so on the end of the month. And so we'll do a Facebook Today. Live. And yeah. And she's like, I watch all of your Facebook Lives and I just love Scentsy. And when I turn 18, I'm going to be a Scentsy consultant. I can't wait. So
that's our future. Right
yeah.
There.
So cool.
We've been selling Scentsy Buddies for 9 years now. And all of those kids who got their first Scentsy Buddy will be, you know, 10 years ago are now entrepreneurs ready to take on the world and find a process that gives them a little money, great return on their time invested, but more importantly, the flexibility to develop into who they really are and a system that supports that. And that's what excites me,
mm-hmm.
is every year there's a new crop of 18-year-olds ready to learn how to become better people.
I think you think of direct selling as it's a product that you sell, but there's a lot of personal growth that happens.
And I think Mary Kay Ash said it's a people business that, you know, at the end of the day, and this is a common theme, we are here to help people have better lives. And most direct selling companies have that ideal.
Most.
A few can accomplish it. Some are run by people just manipulating a number system until they make money and move on.
Greed and narrows in.
Yeah. We hope to always be the gold standard of direct selling companies in terms of contribution to the world without hurting anybody.
I love it. Well, I feel like I've seen that firsthand, for sure. I know you guys personally, and I know that you mean what you say when you say those things. And also, you have a married daughter. Is it Mary that's
mm-hmm.
coming in?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Grandkids, like, on the horizon. That's
maybe,
exciting.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, no pressure. No
out.
Pressure on them. Yeah, we're kind of in that shoulder season between parenting and grandparenting.
Well, and you know, so. I keep saying you have to wait at least till I turn 50. I have to be at least 50 to be a grandma.
So,
yeah.
I love it.
That's
I love
coming
it.
Up.
I know.
So where can my listeners find out more about opportunities available through and with Scentsy?
I would say find our Facebook page, Orville and Heidi. Or is it Heidi and Orville or Orville and Heidi?
Heidi and Orville, I think.
Yeah, Heidi and Orville Thompson.
Alphabetically, not because I'm...
Oh, no.
Yeah, alphabetically, Heidi and Orville.
There's a Heidi and Orville Thompson Facebook page where we go on and we kind of champion Cincy consultants and kind of talk about our numbers and...
We just have fun.
Yeah, we just have fun. We don't go on very often. We don't want to... It's kind of like dessert. If you eat it all the time, it kind of ruins it. So that Cincy.com is a great place to...
Cincy.com has a consultant locator. So mm-hmm. if they wanted to search for somebody in their area...
Yeah, but also find, you know, a lot of people know Cincy consultants and just start a conversation.
But the website's fun just to look, to get on and look around. There's a lot of good information on there.
Yeah, so. We've got a great team. We got some great partnerships. We got a partnership with Disney that's going extremely well.
Oh, wow.
They love us. We love them. The products are doing extremely well. So that's kind of fun for a lot of people that know that brand. And our product designers, Disney talks about how amazing our product designers are.
We do have amazing product designers.
They thought we must have... Is what agency did you use to develop this? You know, we did it in-house and they didn't believe it.
That's awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for your time.
Thanks.
Enjoy your family time coming up here, and I hope we can have you guys back on the podcast because I know people want to hear more.
You got to see how many people, what the comments are before you invite us back.
Oh,
well, thank you guys. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Alrighty.
Okay, you guys, I seriously love Orville and Heidi so much. It is so awesome to be able to see close up a couple that have worked together and have truly built a company that is so wildly successful and done it together every step of the way. That's what I love about this episode so much, is that they are so forthcoming about the challenges that they had and everything that came along the way as they kind of stumbled upon this incredible product and then worked together, making all of the decisions together, and built this company from nothing to what we all know of Cincy today. And I love all of the insights they shared about working together and about focusing on the things that are most important and keeping those things top of mind, even when they have enough money to really do anything with it, that they are still so generous and so mindful of the things that are truly important to them. And so I really just look up to them and respect them so much, and all that they have built, and that the example that they are for the rest of us. I wanted to let you know that I got so many emails, people requesting the Epic Marriage Summit, that I went ahead and re-released the Epic Marriage Summit. So starting today, you can go to www.onthebrightersideofmarriage.com, put in your email address, and you will be able to get the Epic Marriage Summit 3 days for free. And I'm super excited. We've revamped it a little bit. So if you've already purchased the All Access Pass, those things will be automatically available, the updates in your membership area. If you have not purchased it yet, it is like new and improved. It's an offer that you absolutely, if you care about your marriage, definitely, definitely want to look into the Epic Marriage Summit. These experts are so incredible and share their very best marriage advice with us. So make sure you go to www.onthebrightersideofmarriage and check out the summit. I'm really excited about the guests I have coming up. Next week, we have Colette Brunson, who is the wife of Russell Brunson, the creator of ClickFunnels. And she talks about what it's like being married to a super energetic entrepreneur with lots of ideas all the time, who hasn't always been as successful as he is today. So we'll get to hear her story next week. So make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode, and tune in next week. Until then, have courage, be kind, and stay on the brighter side.